720 WGN at 610, and it's time for Your Money Matters. And we start each program with the numbers that matter here on this Monday, June the 20th, 2022. The markets closed today for Juneteenth. Gas prices, you heard in the news report, down ever so slightly. Down a penny in Illinois, $5.51 a gallon, $5.94 in Cook County. Diesel actually down for the first time in a long time. Just off record highs, though, of $5.82 a gallon. Not much relief there. The average credit card rate up to 20.65%. No big economic data today, but a loaf of bread now up 28 cents over the past year. Bacon up 80 cents a pound. And a dozen eggs will cost you a dollar more than over the past year. And those are just conservative estimates. I know some of you at the grocery store see even more. And those are the numbers that matter here on Your Money Matters on WGN. All right, thanks so much for joining us. And, you know, on many Mondays, we get a chance to talk with Kristen Myers from The Balance. Not last week. Kristen, I'm sorry to say we had to leave you hanging because we had a tornado outbreak in the Chicagoland area. But you're so understanding, and we're much more than willing to come on again. Good to chat with you, Kristen.
Yeah, you can't use a weak excuse like that next time around, John.
Yeah, that's right.
No,
yeah,
but really, I'm glad everyone's safe, and I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, for sure. We are happy to have you here. You know, I give that little report about gas prices going down, and I think certainly that's a relief to a lot of people, but they are still so inflated, of course, over where they were even a month ago, let alone a year ago. And I think we all feel that, or anyone that ever drives does. Anyone that purchases goods feels it, because diesel runs through our economy in so many different ways. But when you talk about who feels it the most, folks that make minimum wage or around that, boy, they are really eating it.
Yeah, we actually decided to do a study and figure out exactly how badly they're eating it. And it turns out that, you know, if you're a worker that's earning just the federal minimum wage, so just ignoring the state's minimum wage for just a second, so $7.25 an hour, and using the national average price of gas, now this was, of course, when gas was a little bit over $5, it has now come down just under $5. You're going to spend over a fifth of your paycheck, John, on just trying to fill up your gas tank. And in some states, it's going to be a lot worse than that. You know, if you are living in one of 15 states, you're going to actually have to work more than a day in order to fill up your gas tank. So one day's worth of earnings, totally gone.
Wow. Is that pre-tax or post-tax? It's terrible either way, but
it's pre-tax, so it's even worse. So if you really think about it, it is absolutely worse, actually, once, you know, Uncle Sam has taken his cutout. Now, just as a, you know, kind of reference point, if you're making the median salary in the United States, gas is only going to cost you about 7% of your pre-tax paycheck. So it's a huge difference there. And unfortunately for workers that are earning that minimum wage, whether, you know, the federal minimum wage or their state's minimum wage, they are really, really struggling.
Wow. And even 7% seems high to me. I think a lot of people, I mean, I know we budget gas, and I guess it depends on how detailed your budget is, but I think a lot of people, they know they're eating it when they slide their credit card through, but I bet they haven't actually sat down and added up how much they've done in gas, compared it to that salary, to find that number, because even 7% sounds high to me.
I haven't done that one yet, and I don't want to. I almost would rather not know. But if you want to know, for just drivers in Illinois, actually, your state's not doing too badly on the scale, just because your minimum wage there is $12 an hour. And that, you know, extra almost $5 over that federal minimum wage really does make a difference. So workers in Illinois right now have to work just under 5 hours in order to fill up their gas tank. And that is, of course, a huge difference for workers in Wyoming, which is actually the worst state we found on the list. They have to work 10.7 hours just to fill up their gas tank.
That's crazy.
So I would really hate to be a driver in Wyoming right now.
You have a great map at thebalance.com where people can see this. I'm scrolling over to the right. We obviously have, or I should say to the east, we have a lot of listeners in Indiana. 4.9 hours to afford an average week's worth of gas here in Illinois. In Indiana, almost double that, 9.4 hours, because their minimum wage is the federal minimum wage. You go up to Wisconsin with the same thing, with the minimum wage at $7.25, and it's 8.1 hours to afford an average week's worth of gas. That's a whole day of work. And in Michigan, it is a little bit better, just under 7 hours. So yeah, Illinois faring the best. But as you said, Kristen, that's a deliberate result of the higher minimum wage. Kristen, I want to dive in a little bit about how much people's Social Security checks are getting eaten away. You could stick around for another segment, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
All right. More from Kristen Myers, CEO of TheBalance.com in a bit. We continue our conversation with Kristen Myers from TheBalance.com. Kristen, we haven't had a chance to chat since the new inflation numbers came out 10 days ago. I know we were going to guide our primary conversation last week about that before we were interrupted, but anything that's staggering and stuck out to you with the inflation numbers? I know it was higher than people thought and grocery numbers still going up, but anything in particular or just the continued weight of inflation on all of us?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I heard that inflation, you know, when I got a flash, you know, across my cell phone that said inflation print reads at 8.6%, I literally said, yikes, out loud, actually, because inflation the month before, in case anyone has, you know, already forgotten those numbers, inflation in April came in at 8.3%. And we've already had the Federal Reserve, you know, really hiking interest rates, which we all have really been struggling with as mortgage rates go up and car loans and credit card rates go up. So I was really expecting a decline in that number. Economists were also expecting a decline in that number. So to see it go up just made me incredibly nervous, because then, of course, the question is, well, what is inflation going to be next month? What is it going to be in the month of June? And, of course, that's a really big question mark right now. But inflation really is, it's hitting everyone, and it's hitting us everywhere, it seems.
Yeah, and those with fixed incomes. Now, I know Social Security, you know, goes up with inflation, but it's not a month-to-month recalibration. What they do it in the fall, if I'm not mistaken, and while people saw an increase this year, it's nowhere near the 8.6% that we're now seeing month-by-month, 6 months later.
Yeah, so Social Security, they do make inflation-related increases, but they're not really tied to inflation in that way. In general, Social Security tends to get boosted about 1%. And we saw the biggest increase this year when they increased it, of course, by nearly 6%. But of course, still, I mean, we're at 8.6% for inflation. So even with that increase in Social Security, you know, folks that are really reliant on Social Security, which, you know, a lot of Americans, especially if they're over the age of 65, are, that's not doing enough, especially because, unfortunately, for the, you know, for a lot of folks that are still working, you still have some leverage there. You can go to your boss and ask for a raise, work for a promotion, especially with the labor market as tight as it is right now. But if you are on a fixed income, I mean, just as the name implies, you have no recourse there. It's a fixed income and there's nothing that you can do about it. So it just seems, unfortunately, for folks that are on a fixed income or are reliant on Social Security, more and more of that income has to go to necessities like housing and groceries and gas. And we've discovered it's 70% just on basics and necessities. 70% of the average Social Security benefit has to go towards the average cost of necessities like food.
Right. And you guys broke it down to actually show the dollar amount that it's worth less than it was the year before for each of those monthly payments. I think that's just a really helpful way to understand just how thin the dollar goes.
Yeah, about $60 less a month than it was last year. And of course, again, when we see the price of, you know, gas, as we were just discussing, going up, hitting those record highs, we have groceries really going up, especially if you're trying to get a high protein item like chicken or beef. You know, groceries in general are up about 11% since last year. So that $60 really would help so many Americans, I think, every single month as they're trying to essentially pay for things. Again, these are necessities we're talking about. These aren't vacations. These aren't, you know, things that, you know, a new pair of shoes, things that people want. These are things that people absolutely need. And so there's not much left over for them to do other things.
Right. I love your column, too, as well, when you're able to chime in there. And one of the ones I saw, and this is a little going back about a month or so, so I'm curious if you'd write it differently today, was the idea of someone that is looking to buy a new home in this crazy market. You mentioned those mortgage rates going up, and you prognosticated even back in May that, you know, we might have a recession on the future. Obviously, we're not there yet, and a seller's market. I don't know, what has anything in the last month changed your advice or outlook for people that are in a situation where they are either looking to buy for the first time or they're looking to do the sell and buy at the same time?
It really kind of, I think, depends. It's going to be on your financial situation. But considering that we do have a recession looming, and I think most economists are pretty much saying absolutely yes, we're going to see a recession next year. It just depends on when next year we're going to see it. We typically say that you should probably hold off on making bigger purchases. And so if you are a person that's in a situation where you might have some flexibility, waiting is not necessarily the worst idea. The problem with that, however, is that we don't see home prices moderating by terribly too much. You know, they say about 10% over the next couple of years. And with mortgage rates continuing to rise, now, of course, if there is a recession, we could see those mortgage rates come down. But with mortgage rates continuing to rise, you're going to actually get hit on both sides of the coin. Not only will you be paying a higher price for a house, but you're also going to be shelling out more in the interest rate. So it is this very interesting and strange dance. It's a very hard, I think, decision to make. I think it's going to be incredibly personal on your, you know, your current financial situation, how much money you've got saved, how well you are prepared for a recession, and how confident you are, honestly, in some of your job security going forward. Because as we know, in recessions, unemployment tends to tick upwards. So buying a house is not a great idea if you are someone who might be nervous about losing your job going forward.
Great points. Kristen, as always, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks so much.
Kristen Myers, TheBalance.com. Always a great website. I always say, go to the front page. It's a real good snapshot about where we are in the economy today. All right, let's take a break and then more. Your Money Matters after this on WGN. Your Money Matters. We're going to talk about helping your credit score in just one moment. Hopefully get an answer to the question of the day. Two of the top five Chicago companies that have seen the biggest growth in the past few years are in what industry? Let's go to Leo. Leo, you're on WGN. Hey, Leo.
Well, hello and good afternoon, John. Nice program. Healthcare. I was kind of thinking daycare more, but healthcare was just because of everything going on.
Right, and healthcare always does well, and it's a growing industry. Just the percentage-wise, in the past 5 years, two of the top five companies, they're not in healthcare. I'm sorry, Leo. Great guess, though.
All right, take care. Thank you, man.
Yeah, let's go to Francis. Hey, Francis.
Hi, your TV production, film production companies located here in Chicago?
Oh, what a great guess, because they are growing exponentially, more and more shows filming in Chicago. It's just not the answer to the question of the day, Francis. I'm sorry.
Okay, cool.
Great guess, though. 312-981-7200 if you've got any guests. Okay, let's go to our next guest who has 1.6 million followers on his TikTok page. Seth Godwin, a guy who works in finance, is the way he introduces himself with each video. He's got really great tips. Seth, thanks for hopping on with us today.
Hey, John, it's great. It's great to be on with you. I appreciate you having me on.
I feel like I'm talking to a finance celebrity after watching so many of your videos. And, you know, you say you're a guy who works in finance and you make these TikTok videos and you really do give some tips. When did you start doing this? Why did you start doing this?
Well, I started doing it because I was bored during the pandemic, just to be honest with you. I started doing it in July of 2020. So I'm coming up on my 2-year anniversary.
Congratulations. Why do you think it took off so much?
Well, I think the pandemic kind of reset everybody's idea around finances. Everybody started looking at their money more carefully because, you know, so many people were being laid off and a lot of people were stuck. And when those stimulus checks started coming out, people, you know, really realized, hey, I got to do something better with my money.
Right. What was the first video that really took off, or the topic that really took off and you went, oh, boy, I've got something here?
So the crazy thing is that I had a lot of it was a lot of luck. I started talking about buying cars. Like, I shared tips about how to buy cars, and my fourth video got 100,000 views overnight. And it just took off and compounded greatly from there.
What do people respond to? I know you have a lot of car posts, but is it a lot about credit? I mean, is it things that we all agree we should have learned a lot earlier in life but didn't? Are those the videos that you get a lot of responses to?
Oh, definitely. The credit videos do incredibly well. Talking about budgeting, talking about saving and investing, those are the things that everybody wishes would have been taught in school, but unfortunately weren't. So those videos resonate really well.
Have you gotten interactions with other people that have said that what you've done, the tips you've given, as simple as they are, and I'm not trying to minimize what you're doing, you just do it in a very digestible way, has changed their financial life?
So that is honestly the biggest blessing of doing this. That it's reading the comments about that, yes, I've gotten plenty that have said, you know, my credit score has been in the 500s for years. I'm now up in the 700s, and I'm about to buy a home. I've gotten so many comments like that, or I've been able to be approved for my, you know, my dream car, or, you know, I've been able to do so many crazy things that they wouldn't have been able to do had they not watched my simple, you know, 1 to 2 minute videos, and that's incredible to me.
Yeah, I just think that you're one of the great examples of why when people kind of shun away TikTok, many of our listeners are like, I don't want another one. I've already got these other apps, and I know you're on Instagram and stuff as well. But there is a lot of knowledgeable people out there that are trying to spread good information. And I guess it's about who you follow and the topics you follow, because it really can be a benefit for people.
Oh, 100%. The TikTok algorithm is really, really intuitive, and it picks up on what you like, what you watch, and it'll show you more of that. So it's definitely curated. So the more finance you watch, the more finance you're going to get. But the more dancing videos you watch, same thing is going to happen.
Right, and you can do both of them, and there's nothing wrong with a little bit of both. So there you go. Tell you what, we got about a minute before we go to our first break. I do want to ask, since we have you here, what are some credit tips that you've given that have resonated with people in a way to help boost up their score?
The biggest thing that I always recommend is never letting more than 10% of your total available credit report to the credit bureaus each month. So,
can you explain that a little bit more?
Absolutely. So everybody has a statement date that their balance gets reported to the credit bureaus. You can find that for free on Credit Karma. So if you have $1,000 of credit limit, you don't want more than $100 reporting to the credit bureaus each month, because that shows responsible usage.
So you find out the day so you know what it is, and you make sure you've paid off all, ideally, or as much as you possibly can, what, a day or two before that date, so that when it gets reported, you're in good shape?
That is absolutely correct, John.
I didn't know that that was public information, that people could find out when it was reported. I always just pay my credit card bills once a week just because I want to stay above that exact thing, but I didn't know I could go find the date. Look, I'm learning something, Seth. There we go. Yeah. Stay on the line. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get some more tips for folks. Seth Godwin, 1.6 million followers on TikTok, doling out all sorts of financial advice. And Seth, we were talking about utilization, credit card utilization, or credit utilization, I should say, and knowing the date. Do you think that a lot of people, and I would consider myself part of this as well, that don't know exactly what number of, what the percent of how much credit card of your credit you should utilize? I'm sure there's a better way to ask that question, but I think you know what I'm driving at, Seth.
I got you, John. Yeah, so I think most people actually don't know, because most people have multiple credit cards and don't necessarily always add up the total amount of credit ability to spend that they have. So I'd say probably a majority of people don't know.
Yeah. So what is that number that you'd recommend?
So when it comes to utilization, you got to find out how much total available credit you have to spend, add that all up, and then you don't want to be above 10% of that every single month.
Do some people think that that number is higher? I mean, I've seen some people say more than 10, but the credit scores reflect that that's not true.
For sure. One of the biggest misconceptions you'll hear is, oh, you can spend up to 30% of your total utilization. And while technically they won't punish you for doing that, you're not going to get the best score by doing that. Really, you want to be anywhere between 1% and 9% to get the absolute best out of your credit score.
Is part of, let's say you have pretty good credit and you're paying, you're making your payments every month on time and your score just isn't going up higher, is it going to the credit cards that you do have and that you're still going to be safe with and asking for a little bit of a limit increase just to get that number a little higher for utilization?
That is always an option. you'll more than likely see a slight dip in your score after requesting a credit increase, simply because there's almost always going to be a hard inquiry. But once you get your utilization kind of back under that threshold, you should start seeing your score go back up again.
Right. 630 texted in, hey, John, I work in a high school, and these credit finance topics are taught. School loans, mortgages, credit card savings, 401k, all of it. Problem is high school students can't connect to the concepts yet. Typical high school student only has a debit card. They can't relate to the other things. Thanks so much. Well, 630, I am proud of the high school that you teach at. And maybe some schools are wising up to this, but that's not the experience I had, Seth, in high school.
I'm right there with you. I'm about to hit my 10-year reunion, and my sister is about to hit her 3-year reunion, and she wasn't taught any of this stuff either. So I love that they are, whatever school they're talking about, is teaching this stuff. It just wasn't my experience either.
Yeah, 630, give us a shout-out to your high school. I want to give them a little love. But I think you bring up a great point. I mean, you're a young guy, Seth, and your sister is too, and you're part of a generation that is, you know, a lot more tech-savvy maybe than mine. I'm another 10 years past you. And but I imagine that's a lot of your audience too, right? And you have such a power, and I'm sure you wouldn't put it that way, but I mean, you're impacting people at a point when if they learn about it when they're 18 and 19, it's going to make their lives so much easier than someone learning it, although it's better late than never, when they're 55 or 65 or 75.
100%. And that's kind of become my mission, is to teach people the stuff that I wish I would have known when I was 17 and 18, so that I would have had a leg up in this crazy rat race.
All right. You do a lot of car tips. Do you have anything for us or what we should be doing at the dealership? I know that times are a little strange right now when we go to dealerships, but do you have any tips for that?
Oh, yeah. Even with this crazy car market, there are still three things that I tell people to avoid saying at all costs. Number three, saying that you're not sure what you want. You should be going into a dealership knowing the exact car that you're trying to get off of that lot. Otherwise, they'll try to sell you something else that you probably don't want or need.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, what's your best price? You don't want the dealership's best price. You want your best price. So you got to research what that car is going for before you go in and start offering. And the number one thing is saying, I want my payments to be a certain amount of dollars. Let's say I want my car payment to be $400. Well, $400 a month is very manipulative at car dealerships, unfortunately. $400 could be a $20,000 car at 36 to 48 months, or it could be a $50,000 car at an 84-month term.
Right.
You know? So go in knowing how much you want to spend, and you should already know how much you're going to be spending per month.
You might have just answered this, but the 708 wanted to know. I'm dying to know what his number one tip is when buying a vehicle. The video that took off, was that the one? Was it general tips about buying a vehicle, or did you just cover one right there?
That's actually what I was covering. I think that's why that video took off. It was those three tips.
All right. Yeah, don't go in there telling them the monthly amount. And by the way, 630 texted back that it's Bartlett High School. So shout out to Bartlett High School. Seth, we'll have to have you on the program again. Tell people where they can follow you at.
John, it's been a pleasure. I'd love to come back anytime. You can find me on TikTok at Seth.Godwin or on Instagram at Seth Godwin, GodWin.
All right, Seth.Godwin on TikTok or elsewhere as well. All right, Seth, take care, all right?
Appreciate you. Have a good one.
Yeah, he explains things so well. Trust me, you want to see a few more of those videos. We'll have to have him on again to talk through some other topics that he goes through, because he goes through banks and all sorts of other things, and he puts it in a very digestible way. Hey, we still got an answer to the question of the day lingering out there somewhere. Five companies in Chicago were rated as the fastest growing over the last 5 years. One was a cryptocurrency company. One was another tech company. One was a logistics company. But two of the top five are in what industry? Two of the top five fastest growing Chicago companies are in what industry? 312-981-7200 for your chance at a WGN Radio t-shirt. We'll tell you about it after this on WGN. All right, two of the five top growing companies in Chicago are in what industry? Let's go to Valerie. Hey, Valerie, you're on WGN.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
What's your guess?
My guess is like shipping or freight.
It's a great guess. And I number three in Chicago for fastest growing company is a company called, it's either Norsha or Nordia Logistics. And that is a freight hauling company. And the figuring out about that, it was actually a Ukrainian immigrant who started that company, a 43-year-old named Ellen Lopatkinka. But that's just one of the top five, Valerie. It's not two of them. So great guess, just not the right answer. Have a good one.
All righty. Thanks. You too.
All right. 312-91-7200. Don't know if we have quite enough time to get one more in, but if you call right now, I'll have Andrew ready to go to see if he can get you on the line. But yes, we'll have an answer to that hopefully tomorrow if we don't get one here in the next minute. I also want to let people know I'm so excited. We've been talking about diesel prices, and about a month ago, it was about a month and a day ago, we had the 100th anniversary, of course, of WGN Radio, and we had Max Armstrong on the show, because, you know, we were looking back at some great WGN reporters, past and present, and, of course, we wanted to get Max on. We had Orion as well, and I figured, let's get Max on again, because he talked so eloquently about how the price of diesel impacts every little thing that we have. Well, guess what? Max Armstrong is coming back tomorrow, and I'm so thrilled to be able to have him on the air. So he'll be joining us right at the start of the show tomorrow at 7 o'clock, or excuse me, 6 o'clock. I'm distracted because I'm trying to get one last call. You got 10 seconds. Nadine, what's your guess, Nadine?
Music?
No, it's not music. That'll be the last guess for today. A good one, though. We had some good ones. Top five businesses, two are in what industry? All right, we'll see you again tomorrow.